Well, now Hurricane Hanna slumped to tropical storm strength even as it caused heavy killer floods, and forecasters said it still poses a hurricane threat to the U.S. East Coast. Hanna's maximum sustained winds slipped to 70 miles an hour, but the U.S. National Hurricane Center in Miami said it still has the potential to become a hurricane again by Thursday. The Hurricane Center said its forecast track could carry Hanna toward the east coast of Florida, Georgia, or South Carolina in 2 or 3 days. And newly formed tropical storm Ike was cruising westward across the central Atlantic and was projected to be near the storm-weary Bahamas by Sunday. And still further east, tropical storm Josephine formed Tuesday and was heading west with maximum sustained winds of about 40 miles an hour. The Hurricane Center said it could be near hurricane force by Wednesday or Thursday. What's with all the weather? In a moment, meteorologist Scott Stevens joins us. In a moment, Scott Stevens, meteorologist, about this very strange weather we've been having right here on Coast to Coast AM. Scott Stevens has been fascinated with weather since he started keeping a weather diary for a scouting merit badge, and then a year later he was reporting conditions in his small town in Idaho to area television stations. Eventually he started working for TV stations all over the country, and he's a darn good meteorologist. Here he is, Scott Stevens. Scott, how are you?
I'm glad to be back, George.
Likewise, my friend. And since you've been away, Mother Nature's been playing with the weather, Scotty. My gosh, what? I mean, I cannot remember a time when we had so many hurricanes or potential hurricanes right after each other. I mean, here now we have the possibility of three developing. What's going on climate-wise, Scott?
You know, George, I got into this whole business because of what was done during the hurricane season in 2004.
Right.
When those four hurricanes were introduced rather intimately to Florida, you know, I had kind of done enough of the research and weather modification and come across Lieutenant Colonel Bearden's work on non-scalar potentials and quantum weapons, and hadn't come across the acoustic aspect of things, but certainly the chemtrails were not lost on me. Didn't know what they were for at that point in time, but it was apparent by looking at the satellite imagery that something was horribly wrong. And for those storms to be driven into Florida one after the other, I was busting out inside. You know, I had to say something to somebody. And this is, we took 2 years off hurricane-wise. 6 and 7 were very, very quiet. And at the beginning of those hurricane seasons, kind of because of the shock of what we went through in 4 and 5, hurricane forecasts were kind of reduced. You know, it'll be just a typical year. And then we were even disappointed because so few storms developed. And then this year, we're just back on the gravy train again.
And they predicted a pretty active season in 2007. As you said, Scott, we didn't get it. And then they predicted a pretty good season this year, and it looks like they're going to be right on.
We're on our way. But at this point in the game, well, what were we up to in 05? K, Katrina, 29, August. So here we are coming up on GHIJ. And we're about a week and a half to 10 to 20 days behind the pace that was set in 05. And 5, we went into the Greek alphabet. It was January, and the National Hurricane Center was still kicking out discussion. So they were stunned. They didn't know what's going on. And the biggest thing we've got with hurricanes is the inability to forecast intensification. That's the big puzzle that everybody's trying to get.
And I'm telling you, Scott, we were so lucky that Gustav died when it did, because had that hit as a 4 or 5, it could have been a disaster.
You know, and it may have been if we have multiple agendas going on in the sky, and that's still something I'm wrestling with, because I have not been privy to any of the backroom intelligence, anything, you know, stamped secret. I don't get to look at. I'm just kind of discerning from what we see from above, you know, as a purely objective observer. And if we've got multiple nations warring with these energy weapons, you know, maybe one nation wanted that to be a Cat 4, Cat 5 before it made landfall, and somebody, maybe it was us, that came in and able to disrupt it and bring it down to a 2. You know, so there's so many things going on up there that we're seeing these extreme weather events, one after the other after the other.
What do you think is developing them, first of all? Let's not talk about the intensity, but what's creating so many this year?
Well, somebody in a back room with a curtain, it's behind them. You know,
you think there's some man-made involvement here?
Absolutely. 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 You know, and it's just, what I wrote last week is that we're probably dealing with between about 92 and 96% control of the weather. It's just that good. And when you see these big events, there is a great amount of attention and intention put into the developing of these beasts, whether it's an Iowa flood experience or whether it's a series of hurricanes. And I still think with this particular hurricane season, the East Coast will probably bear the upper part of the damages when we do net destruction totals at the end of the year.
Well, you play around with the weather to hit a country, and it's pretty difficult to point a finger at the other country, isn't it?
It is. It is. And, you know, it may be its best that we don't have all of these politics going on the evening news of this underlying simmering Cold War that deals with geophysical weapons. If you've got an earthquake machine, you don't want the people that just had their city turned to rubble, you know, knowing that it wasn't God that did it, because then they're going to demand a retribution that will be very difficult for their government to turn back. And so, I mean, politically, when the people figure out what's happening, they're not going to be happy. They're not going to be happy. And that's really kind of what they're playing with. They're going to try to keep this as quiet as possible and get away with this asymmetric warfare for as long as possible.
How would one develop a hurricane, or how would you develop a tropical storm in some cases, Scott? And I think when we talked some time ago, they would take an event that was developing, let's say a real tropical storm, and then they would intensify it, they'd magnify it.
Well, there's a couple of ways to create instability in the atmosphere. The primary one is to cool the top of the clouds. You want to create that updraft. And so if you can extract 5, 6, 7, 10 degrees Celsius out of a layer from, say, 35,000 feet to 50,000 feet, you create those cooler cloud tops, then that cooler atmosphere, you increase the stability of the atmosphere and the buoyancy, and you get these updrafts. What then becomes the challenge is collecting these updrafts so you can manage the inflow into the bottom of the storm. So if you can position these hot towers, if you will, in an appropriate configuration, a hexagram, a pentagram, well, squares will do. And then you begin to let the Coriolis force of the earth set it a spinning, and off it goes. And so you just have to keep these hot towers in the right places.
What got you, Scott, to start believing that there was some involvement here by human hands?
Geometry. Seeing impossible geometry in satellite imagery, and then looking at just the plain clouds without prejudging that this couldn't be done. When you just look at it without any emotional attachment and just, oh, man, look at that. That is so cool. How do you think we get clouds shaped that way? You know, it's just, the amount of mail that comes in, people saying, Scott, you know, I kind of heard about your theories, and granted, they were outlandish, but once I started looking and beginning to see things, then I kind of began to make sense of what I was seeing. Before then, it's simply a curiosity. And if we can give people a little bit of knowledge, then they can apply that knowledge to the curious things they see in the sky. And thermodynamics, heat, humidity, the fluid motion of the atmosphere is how you would expect to see clouds. And we see them with grids. We see them with sharp edges.
That's true.
The phenomenal things that are happening in the sky, I'm really kind of stunned and a little bit disappointed in the atmospheric science community for
Not saying anything?
Not being brave enough. You know, I understand the job thing. I understand the ostracizing. I get that.
Yeah, I know. You more than anyone understand the risks.
At some point, the truth of the matter simply has to come out. And then you have to face your peers or face your family. You know, when you were defending the status quo, when inside you may have known that it was false and known that it was false for some time. But science, and it doesn't matter if it's atmospherics or physics, moves like a glacier.
I would guess that there are only three countries that have this capability of manipulation, and that would be the United States, Russia, or China. Am I right, or is there any more there?
If you go back to Colonel Bearden's work when he was in military intelligence back in the 80s, and granted, this is old, but he still has some connections, he ascertains that there are more nations with these weapons. Japan, China, Australia, Great Britain, possibly Brazil. India, he claims, may have licensed it within the last few years. So that's when you begin to see a conflicting of agendas. And when you have, let's take an Olympic-sized pool. It's still, it's calm, it's in its natural, steady state. You drop a three-year-old child in a distant corner, they begin to splash around. You get compression waves radiating out from that point of influence. And then you throw another child and a couple of adults. How do you manage the confluences of all of those waves? And then you begin to see concentrated areas of energy and events showing up in the atmosphere. Maybe not what we intended. And that would be one of the reasons why we are literally the chemtrail flights are required, because they're needed to measure what's going on up there and then to align and target these weapons.
Could these be experiments that have gone awry or events and we're fighting back?
I think most of the experimentation would happen out over the open ocean, where they can do unseen observation of the effect. Six latitude north, say 150 west, out in the Pacific Ocean. A couple of ships. You can play with your weapons out there overland, where nobody's going to see what you're doing.
It's a big ocean.
Yeah, you can experiment. And the ocean's a great place to experiment with these kind of things. I would say a lot of the experimentation with weather modification was done a long time ago, and we're really to the point where if they want a tornado in Oklahoma City, there's going to be a tornado in Oklahoma City. The question is do they actually get it down on the blocks that they've got targeted? They're really, really good. So, What I want to see out of this is oversight. We have to have public oversight.
How do you get that? A whistleblower? Somebody who says this is what we're doing?
That would help. That really, really would help. I think a great way to lay this foundation is to have those scientists who are employed by whomever, back during Vietnam, back during the 70s and 80s, who were participating in the development of these technologies through time.
It went back that far, didn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Colonel Bearden says that it began continuously by Centennial Weekend back in 76. That's 32 years.
Are any scientists out there saying what you're saying?
Not out loud. They'll say it to your face, and they'll have... I got a letter yesterday from an Air Force med. And he's like, you know, it all makes sense, and I see it. I see it. And he didn't understand why more weren't talking about it. You know, it'll come. George, I know it'll come. It's simply too obvious. And that's why I felt, you know, rather secure about talking about it, is because I'm not divulging any secrets. I'm just telling you to look at the sky. And then you've got to use your logic and reasoning facilities to then figure out what's going on.
Well, it's truly bizarre. And also, you know, the sun. We haven't had a sunspot in God knows how long.
So. Isn't that amazing?
Do you think that has anything to do with any of this? Or at least jump-starting things?
Let's just say when the sun does finally get active, as we approach this next solar peak in 2011, 2012, we'll know it, and we'll see the planet's atmosphere respond. How eventually that will manifest in our day-to-day weather, I can't speculate.
All right, stay with us, Scott. Scott Stevens, our special guest, a meteorologist. What we'll do now, we'll open up the phone lines for you. We'll give you an opportunity to chat with him as well. Chemtrails, these potential hurricanes, he's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're going to take your phone calls this hour with meteorologist Scott Stevens. Scott, in the past, did we not have hurricanes, though, of this kind of magnitude, this kind of intensity?
Sure we did.
I mean, so what would make you think that now these are manipulated and then we didn't have it?
Well, because we have had a defense secretary that said we could. Take the man at his word. You know, if he's out there, Defense Secretary Cohen back in 97, if he's up there saying, we've got terrorists that can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, stimulate volcanoes, why would he say that if he didn't know they could? The Air Force, in two papers, their 2020 vision and owning the weather by 2025, lay out a very compelling case of the goals and the reasons of why we would want to own the weather. You know, we've got generally understood air superiority across the world.
And we're not talking about just seeding clouds, are we?
No, that would be like running some oxen in an NASCAR race. You know, that's really about how effective that is versus the technologies we're using. You know, and I had an interview with a Lockheed Martin scientist last November.
Mm-hmm.
And he went through the thought processes and told us how he had taken some notes and kind of put them off to the side and came back to them over a couple of weeks. And he said, one day, Scott, they just yelled at me. And they said, Scott, don't you know that an acoustic node is a low pressure? An acoustic node is a low pressure. So what he did was the next day he went into work, got his graphics guys around, and he said he started sketching out things and they were beginning to draw this up, and he brought the materials guys over. He said, we need to start building this. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it does, but let's start. And in a couple of days, they were in a big warehouse, and he said, I know the speed of sound, and so I got out some big speakers, and I had this very long tube, and I could put speakers at each end, crank up the DBZ, and he said, you know, the node should be right here. So he got out his knife, cut a hole in this big, long tube, and out rushed a gust of air. And this big, long, suspended tube then began to move because we had air rushing in the ends and then out from that hole. He said, well, if that's where the node is, then the anodes are here and here. Cut out two more holes, and air ran out those holes the other way. So we had isolated two high pressures and a low pressure and created those air currents simply with sound. You drop the frequency further, scale it up, and the holes I was seeing in all of the satellite imagery adjacent to hot towers, these monstrous thunderstorms, were the acoustic anode. And so you can drive these nodes up or down or laterally, creating horizontal wind shear. And one of the ways you control a storm's development, and in particular rainfall, is you cut off the top of the storm. You create a cap or a shear layer, and then you get the rain droplet not developing to sufficient size to then fall to the ground. The storm goes through, it's cut off, rainfall averted. And if, say, western Kansas, we've got wheat farmers out there that are hankered for a crop.
Sure.
You've got 20 storms, climatologically speaking, 20 storms. If we can have four of those produce nothing, we cut the other five down by 20%, and then we accentuate five of them so they're 150%, and then the rest we just kind of leave alone. But if we could have, over the course of that season, reduced total rainfall by 80%, and we can either pack that rainfall at the front of the growing season, or more often what we see is at the back end of the growing season. So over the summer three-month period, when you look at the climatology, well, it was just about normal. They got all the normal rainfall. But it didn't come when the crop needed it. You impact the ability of a nation's breadbasket to feed its population.
All right, we'll go to the phones. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with Scott Stevens. Hi there.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I just had an idea. I was thinking that someone's bringing these hurricanes to us. If something were developed to put cold water through the eye of the storm, it would be like the wheel, the inside of a wheel, and perhaps that would stop the motion.
What we'd need to do is disrupt the outflow. We need to cap that eye, and what we do is invert the nose. We would literally just turn them on their sides, clip them, and I think that's what happened. We saw a whole lot of disruption in Gustav between about 12 and 22 hours prior to landfall. The eye just kind of came apart. It never really got organized again. And so it looked like there was there was disorganization introduced into what was a beautiful, beautiful stadium eye before the thing made landfall in Cuba. And the NHC, the National Hurricane Center, had anticipated that Gustav would regain its intensity after Cuba, that interaction with the land of Cuba, but it just never really happened.
Now, here's the interesting question. Let's say Gustav was manipulated and it was killed. We brought down its intensity. Why didn't they do the same thing to Katrina? It went the other way.
The thing with Katrina is that we have to go into politics, and we have to go to the Bush administration, and we have to go to handwritten notes by Karl Rove. He wanted the governors of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama to cede control of their territory in a martial law situation before the feds would bring in aid. And that backfired against the administration, and they looked like buffoons. They knew the storm was coming days ahead of time, and they had FEMA had everything they need for Katrina.
Yeah.
They withheld it to get those concessions by those governors. And if those Democratic governors had not stood up to the administration, I promise you there would be many, many counties along that Gulf Coast that to this day would still be under martial law.
First time caller, Wanda in Washington. Hey, Wanda.
Hi, George. Hi, Scott. First of all, I would like to say that I have been watching Steve Quayle's website,
mm-hmm.
and he had dataforscience.net on there, and he was showing pictures, and it's still up there, where there are anomalies mm-hmm. for those hurricanes, and there are squares there, which just do not show up in hurricanes. So that shows that they are being manipulated, and I do believe that they are coming in. I don't know if it's from us, this administration, if it's from Russia, if it's from China, but I do know that if you stop and think about it, the insurance industry... If they're trying to cover their rear ends on this, they could be like the mortgage industry, or it could be Bush and his administration trying to cover up what they've been doing as far as manipulating these storms.
You know, my feeling with the insurance industry is that they have the resources. They could bond to have the capital to develop hurricane mitigation technology. You don't have to throw Dynagel. You don't have to do all of this other polluting of the environment. Just change with sound the flow, the harmony, the hue of the storm. Disrupt the eye core a little bit, and the thing will wobble for a while and kind of spin down and not likely spin back up prior to landfall. They could do it. But I talked to a man by the name of Ben Livingston who did a lot of the government's weather manipulation during the Vietnam War. And he's like, you know, we did it then. We could do it now. We're just not. And as far as talking to the point of the who, you know, I have pictures of chemtrails over the better part of 60 nations. And there are very, very few organizations which can go to that many different sovereign countries and allow these weather flights overhead. These other governments know, just as our government knows. So there is a power superseding all of our sovereign governments which are running this. They're never elected. They'll never be elected. Well, these governments are told what's coming, and then they have to react.
I would love to see you at these political conventions, Scott. They'd come at you like crazy, wouldn't they?
I can handle my own.
Well, west of the Rockies, Idaho Falls, Idaho. Matt, you're on the air.
Home.
Go ahead.
Hey, Scott.
How are you, Matt?
Hey, good. Listen, I watch you on KPVI, and you're good. You're all right. But what my question was is, I kind of turned into a hurricane geek on this one. I watched Gustav and this monster storm go over western Cuba, mm-hmm. and it just, it ripped the eye wall apart pretty much.
Good.
And the eye wall never,
it never came back together.
Yeah, it never came back together.
No.
And, as far as hurricanes go, there's so many variables that go into it as far as the upper winds and, the winds aloft and all the inflow and the outflow and all this stuff. And I just don't buy it.
The manipulation.
No, I just don't buy it.
The issue is the energy budget.
Excuse me?
The issue usually is the energy budget, conforming to the second law of thermodynamics.
Well, I just don't buy it because there's too many variables that are involved, and because hurricanes in general, when they look at them, they don't know if they're, let's take, for example, Gustav.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know if it was going to hook to the east or keep going to the northwest. And there's so many variables with the high pressures, the low pressures. You know all about this. I don't have to, lecture you about that. And I just don't buy it.
Now, Matt, let me ask you, do you think they have the capability of doing things like this?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't. It's
right.
the whole system as a whole is too great, and just take, for example, Gustav, and now it hit Cuba. It hit western Cuba with gusts of over 200 miles an hour, okay? And then all of a sudden, it gets to the shore, it gets to the land, and it rips the eye. Just the land alone rips the eye wall apart, and it never really, thank God, never really
reformed. But why? Why didn't it come back together?
Because why didn't it, Scott? Because it went over land, and as we know, as a hurricane goes over land, it fundamentally loses energy.
Matt, they could create a 150-mile hurricane over northern Louisiana in under 36 hours.
I recognize that you're a meteorologist, but as far as I'm concerned, and I've watched these hurricanes, I'm a geek. I'm not a meteorologist, but these things get over land and they do funky things.
Yeah, they do. And Matt, I'm not here to convince anybody of anything. I'm here to convince people to simply take the time when they're walking to their car and not look at their feet.
Well, there's no question, Scott, that governments would love to control weather in all kinds of ways. I find it interesting that these hurricanes always tend to head toward the offshore oil drills. And, you know what happens when they shut those down? I mean, oil went down today because Gustav didn't hit them. But what would have happened had it hit them?
Well, and we certainly had a color of that information from the media. Oil went down, but that still doesn't mean that there wasn't in the teens production still shut in.
You know what my theory is? You know, that these things are, patterns caused because of the sun and everything else. But I also believe, this is how far out I get sometimes, that negative energy from human beings might be causing a lot of this as well.
Well, that is a whole area that I've not discussed on the air before. And that is, the Oregon energy, the life force of this planet. And if you truly wanted to capture and control all of that activity, that's the force to use.
I mean, if we can use positive energy to slow them down, and I believe we've done that in an experiment, why can't you use negative energy to make them bigger?
And so we have CNN and Fox and the Weather Channel, Weather Terror, New Orleans under attack. You create that consciousness around the landfall event.
Let's go to Long Island, New York. Scott, you're on with Scott.
Hey, George. Hey, Scott. How you doing tonight?
Good.
My name's Scott also. I wanted to bounce something off you guys. I think Scott's right on with what he's saying, but, you know, like my father used to say, a tree is known by its fruits. So you have to look at this thing. They have a hurricane that exists. I believe they can control the intensity and steer it. They rev it up to a Category 5, run it over the end of Cuba, goes out into the Gulf, builds from, I think it went down to a 3 or 4, builds up to like a 3, 4, threatening a 5 again, gives them the justification to evacuate the whole city, and then just before it hits the city, they scale it down from a 4 to a 3 to a 2, mm-hmm. so it doesn't do any damage. But they've accomplished two things. You have to look at, well, what did it all do? Well, it gave justification for getting, making a mandatory evacuation of the entire city, and also gave a justification to call in a lot of military people dressed in the uniforms of National Guards on the supposition they were there to help bolster the dikes, you know, for this big Category 5 storm. So you say to yourself, why would they get everybody out of a city and send a whole bunch of military people in when the city's vacant and they know that the dikes don't need bolstering because they're going to scale down the storm?
Well, one of the reasons, though, you know, they got blasted so much for their poor handling of Katrina. I think in some cases they overreacted this time.
This way, Bush and Cheney did not have to go to the convention in Minneapolis. They had an excuse not to put the mugs on TV.
Well, it was probably good or bad timing, I guess.
Well, do you not think in politics you take advantage of every ball that's thrown you?
True.
Yeah, you either jump out of the way, you bunt, home run, you do something with the opportunity. That's the truth of an administration and its integrity is what they do with event after event after event, not just Katrina, not just Esau, but the whole series of things you have to look at as a whole. And, you can't have these things too obvious because then you give it away. And that's kind of how they get away with it. I mean, the best weapon forever will always be a secret weapon. The other side knows it or not, but if you drop a tornado, you run it through Ohio, I mean, it's just, you've taken a hit. You've taken a hit. You may not have had bombers overhead, but you still have damage on the ground. You've achieved action at a distance.
Will you ever get to the point where you can get other scientists or meteorologists to agree with you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But we're in the process of putting together the documentary for this. And the interviewing process is going. What I've really found interesting from the academic side of things is how slow they're really they change their world viewpoint, their belief system.
Oh, it's very slow. Scott Stevens' website is weatherwars.info. There's a direct link right there. At coasttocoastam.com. Scott, thanks, and always thanks for your theories. And no doubt, no matter what, we've got three potential hurricanes again rolling by in the next week or so. Let's hope they don't hit the United States. I'll be back in a moment with a complete special report on aspartame on Coast to Coast AM.